All right, good afternoon, folks. Hello, good afternoon. Hello, signs of life from the morning, still with us, still alive. Hi. Welcome to the Windows Apps track here at Future Decoded. It's great to see you here in the room. Thanks a lot for coming over to our track. My name's Mike Tolte. I work for Microsoft here in the UK, and it's my job this afternoon in the next 45, 50 minutes to give you a bit of an introduction to the new Universal Windows platform for building modern apps on Windows 10. And the way in which we're going to do this is primarily by way of demonstration. I don't have a ton of slides for you this afternoon, so it's going to be mostly demonstration. And in all honesty, that demonstration is really going to involve what is really a child's toy. It's the remote control Sphero ball. We're going to play with this a little bit. It is a child's toy, but somehow I seem to own one. And we're going to play with this afternoon. And so let's begin as we mean to go on. So I'm just going to wander over to my desktop and let's run up Visual Studio and let's make a new Windows 10 Universal project in Visual Studio. I'm using Visual Studio Enterprise because I work at Microsoft and they give it to me for free. So hey, why wouldn't I? You could use Visual Studio Community for everything that I do in this particular session. I'm just going to make a new project and here we'll say File, New, Project. And we will make a project called, what day is it? Is it Wednesday? Let's call it WED for Wednesday. And I'm just going to make a blank application in here. And I'll say just while Visual Studio is creating this, I'm using C# and XAML and .NET because these days those are mostly my skills. You could use C++ and XAML. You could use HTML and JavaScript. Those are our three primary ways of building these applications. You could achieve the same thing. Let me just press Build in Visual Studio and close down this window that Visual Studio opens for me. And let's just go on a little tour around the solution that we've got as a blank solution here in Visual Studio. I'm just going to pop this thing out. And let's just see if we can zoom in a little bit here on the screen. And so if you've built a XAML-based application before, this probably would feel quite familiar to you. And what you get here is you get an app class made up of C# and XAML in this case. And that app class represents the startup place for your application. It represents the place where your application sort of suspends. It's a singleton object for the lifetime of your application. One of the things that that app class does is it navigates your UI to a thing called your main page, and that's just here as well. There's our main page. The main page is made up again of XAML and C# code, represents your main UI for your application. The next thing you get here is a thing called an application manifest. It is the description of your application, the icons, the names, the permissions that your application requires on the machine, those kinds of things. And then up here, we've got references in this case to something called Universal Windows. And that's kind of the name of the talk. And it's not really something that you would have seen before if you've been building these kinds of applications. This is new. And so let's just talk a little bit about what Universal Windows is before we move along. Where this comes from is that Windows 10 as an operating system is running on more types of devices than it has ever run on in its history before. Sure, Windows is still running on phones and tablets and laptops and convertibles and desktops and all-in-ones, but then Windows has been running on those things for quite a while. But with Windows 10, we're running on whole new classes of device that we haven't run on before. Devices like the new Surface Hub devices from Microsoft, those are big 55 or 84-inch collaboration screens. You can play with them down in the expo if you've not seen them already. You get up in front of those screens. They're great for conference calls. You can collaborate with your friends and colleagues. They have 100 points of touch on those screens. They have pens. They have proximity sensors. They have cameras. They have microphones. They have NFC. Great collaboration devices. They run Windows 10. A different kind of collaboration device maybe is the Xbox One. That's a different kind of collaboration, but nonetheless, it is a collaboration device mostly. It's also running Windows 10. Windows 10 is in preview on the Xbox One right now. Some of you may be already trying that in the room. I'm sure that many of you will have seen videos or demos of our holographic computer, the HoloLens device, augmented reality device. It also runs Windows 10. And lastly, in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, we have the Maker devices, or the IoT devices. We support three or four boards in that category, the primary one being probably the Raspberry Pi 2. It also runs Windows 10. So Windows 10 is running across these different kinds of devices more than ever before, but it is not exactly the same Windows 10 on every single device. It doesn't make sense to run the same operating system exactly on an IoT device, as it makes sense to run on a phone. But what we do have underneath those operating systems is a set of common components that we build the operating systems from. And what that allows us to do is put on top of that this new universal Windows platform. And essentially what that is the set of modern app APIs that exist on any device that runs Windows 10. So if your device is running Windows 10, you have all the APIs of the universal Windows platform available to you on any device that runs Windows 10. Just a little bit of terminology here. We take these APIs and we group them up into things that we call contracts. So we take a set of APIs and we group them up into things that we call contracts. And we group those contracts up into things that we call platforms. So as a developer, you can absolutely open up our SDK. You can find the Universal Windows platform. You can find the contracts that exist in that platform. And you can find the APIs that exist in those contracts. If that is the sort of thing you like to spend your Sunday afternoons doing, you can absolutely do that. And I may use these terms as we go along, so I just wanted to explain them a little bit here as we were speaking. Let's go back over to our demo, though. Let's go back over to Visual Studio. I said we were going to control the Bluetooth ball over Bluetooth. And so we will need the ability to program Bluetooth in this project. So I'm going to go to my application manifest here, and I'm going to say that I need to use the capability of Bluetooth and switch that on. I also want to program this thing. I've built, as lots of people do in demos, a little helper library to help me program the Sphero ball. So I'm going to bring in a reference to a NuGet package that I made, and I've just got it locally on this machine. So I'm going to add a reference to this Sphero package, and we're going to use that to build a few things. What I want to do is start off by building a couple of pieces of UI, a piece of UI to display while we're trying to connect to the ball, and a piece of UI to let us drive the ball. That's the idea. So let me build a couple of user controls in my project here. I'm just going to go and add new item here. And that can be a user control. We'll call this one connecting control. Let me just get my typing right. And I'm going to make another one which I'll call driving control and throw that in as well. Let's just see if we can do that. Let's add new item. It can be a user control. We'll call this one driving control. And then I want these to show up on my main UI. So I'm going to go to my main UI over here. Let's go to that. And let's just throw in those two controls. So we'll have a local, we'll have a driving control. We'll give it a name. Let me just get my... And we'll also have another control, which can be our connecting control. And we'll call that connecting control. And we'll just fix that typo because I can't deal with that with my OCD. And so we got those two things on that main UI. What I want to do is start building that initial piece of UI, that connecting control. So let's go and open that up with our XAML editor here. And I just want to have, firstly, I just want this grid here to have a little bit of background. So we're just going to background equals white. That's fine. And then we can just have a panel in here. And I'm going to make it horizontally in the center and vertically in the center. And then I'm going to display a quick image. Excuse me. And the source of that image, we will find in a minute an image that we can drop into this project. But it's going to come from my assets folder. And I'll call it connecting.png. And I don't want the UI to stretch it in any way. And then I'm just going to have a piece of text on here as well. So we'll have a text block. We'll give it a font size. Let's just give a font size of 18. Let's put this horizontally in the center. And I don't want to hard code the text of this, so I'm just going to give it an identifier so that we can get to it from some resources. So we'll call it text connecting. So I've got a little piece of UI there. Speaking of resources, I want to put some resources into the project. So let's make a folder here. Let's add a new folder into this project. And I'll call that resources. And on my machine, I've got some resource files to drop in there. So I'm just going to go over to this folder here, grab some resources and drop them into this resources folder. And I mentioned a PNG file called connecting, so I've got that on my machine as well. So let's just grab that, and I'm going to drag these bitmaps into this assets folder. And let me just show you a couple of things. Let me show you what connecting looks like. It's a picture of a PC connecting to a Sphero ball. And let me show you what the resources look like. So here's my resource file. And I don't know if you can see that too clearly, but it's setting the text to be connecting PC over Bluetooth, and that's what we're going to display on the screen. Now, I was a little bit sneaky. I'm often a little bit sneaky, and I was a little bit sneaky. I pasted three resource files into this project. Let's just have a quick look. If we go over here, you might spot that I pasted in resources, but I also pasted in device family mobile, device family IoT. So I had a vanilla file, but I also had some ones for the mobile operating systems and for the IoT operating systems. I did the same thing with my picture. So what's one of these device families? What's that all about? Let's pop back over to our pictures for a minute. We group all of these Windows 10 devices into device families, really to deal with the complexity of it. It's a complex world. So what we do is we take all those devices we were talking about previously, and we group them up so there absolutely is an IoT device family. It's got three or four boards in it at the moment, living in that family. There's a mobile family of all the phones and the small tablets. There's a PC family that's got thousands of different kinds of devices in it. That's our biggest family. The Xbox One lives in a family on its own. It's just the only thing in there. The Surface Hubs both live in the Surface Hub family. And then finally, the HoloLens is currently living in its own family as well. What we do with these things is across all those families, you've got the universal Windows platform APIs. So if you use code that uses those APIs, it's going to run and those APIs are going to be present on all those devices. But the risk of that is you could end up with a bit of a lowest common denominator if you weren't careful. There's two reasons why we don't kind of end up with that. One is it turns out the universal Windows platform APIs are around 95%-ish of all our APIs for apps anyway. So it's most of the APIs. But the second reason is, if you think of a particular device family, if you look at a family like, let's say, mobile, if you're on a mobile device, we have extra APIs in an extension platform that we call the mobile extension. Those are the APIs that only exist on mobile. So you can use those APIs as part of your application. But the nice thing about it is if you build code that targets those APIs, that doesn't stop your code running on an Xbox or a HoloLens or a Surface Hub. All you have to do at runtime is make a runtime check to say, is it okay to use these APIs? And if we say yes, then the platform says yes, then you can use those APIs. If not, you're on the wrong kind of device, don't use those APIs. So you can adapt for the platform at runtime and do the right thing. Let's wander back over to our demo and see how we're getting on. So what I wanted to do was we've just put some stuff onto our main UI. So let's just go into our main code here. And as the application spins up for the first time, I'm going to override my onNavigatedTo method and make it async, I think, while we're here. In my little helper library, I defined a class called SphereoBall. So I'm going to get a SphereoBall by awaiting. And I wrote another little class called the SphereoLocator. And it can find you the first Sphero attached to the PC if you give it a nice time span to play with. So we'll say, try and find one within 15 seconds. If it finds one, and I'm going to assume it does, which is very brave and probably stupid, what we should do is we could get rid of that connecting UI. So we could set its visibility to be collapsed. And what we could then do is we want to be able to drive it from our driving UI. So let's say this.drivingControl.setBall, and we'll pass it the ball we just got. And we don't have that function yet, so let's just get Visual Studio to generate that method for us. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It looks like it did. Let's hit Alt-F12 in Visual Studio just to edit that method. And we'll just store that ball somewhere for later use. So we'll have a SphereoBall member here, and we'll say this.ball equals that ball. Okay, great. Let's see if we can run this. Let's go and run it on our local machine. X86 local machine looks good. Let's try that. Jamie, my colleague at the front here, has kindly volunteered to be the custodian of the SphereoBall. Jamie, please come and receive the ball.
Thank you.
Jamie, would you activate the ball? Jamie, would you activate the ball? Don't. So what we're hoping is that we should get a security check in the first instance to make sure that we can use Bluetooth. Is that going to happen for me? Yes, you can. And then the UI should drop, and I'm hoping that the ball will show some sign of life, and then we're ready to go bowling. Okay, great. And so what we need now is a way of driving the ball. So let's make some more UI. Let us go and navigate to our driving control. Here's our driving control. Now, in all honesty, the UI that I want to create for you here is quite simple. I'd like to drag and drop it in a designer. I tried that. It takes about 18 minutes. Don't have 18 minutes. So what I find, you can just go into Visual Studio. If you want a simple UI, you go into Visual Studio, you just say, make simple UI. It's really good.
Oh, nice.
And what you get is, we've got a little UI that lets me rotate the ball, set the speed on the ball, and change the colors on the ball. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. Let's go back to our XAML and just have a look at that for a second. What we're left with is a need to write some event handlers for when you press the red button, the green button, the blue button, and so on and so forth. Also, when you change the speed of the ball and when you change the rotation of the ball. So let's jump into our code behind. I think I can hit F7 in Visual Studio to do that. Yeah, okay, great. And we need to write those event handlers. It's a bit tedious, me stubbing out a bunch of event handlers, so let's just use, again, Visual Studio to add some handlers. And what I've done is I've delegated the colors down to one common function, onColor. So let's say this.ball.setColor, red, green, blue. Cool. When you change the speed on the screen, let's say this.ball, go forward. The speed from the screen is actually too high for the ball, so I'm going to divide it down. So we're going to say e.value over 10. 0.0f, no, f. And then for the rotation, we're going to say this.ball.changeHeading with the new rotation value. Let's try that on the PC. Jamie, are you okay with the ball at the moment? You're not getting stressed out?
Okay.
I know it's a responsibility to look after the ball. I know, I understand. Okay, let's see if we can get to the ball. Takes a little bit of time to connect. Let's see if our second UI pops up. Okay. Jamie, place the ball. I know you can't all see the ball by the... Jamie perhaps can act out what's going on with the ball. Let's see if we can change the ball to be a green.
Yes.
Blue.
Yeah.
Rotate the ball. Hey, I can't drive the ball if you're going to carry the ball. Okay, so we go green, we go red, and we can also drive the ball. I can't see the ball, but... There we go. So we're driving the ball. That's all good. One of the things I don't so keen on with this application at the moment is that if I drag it in, it gets a little bit clunky in terms of the UI. So I'd rather that this adapted a little bit for the format of the window. So let's just do that. It's usually something I would drop into our design tool to do, but I'm just going to do it in a piece of XAML. I got this XAML out of our design tool, Blend, but it takes a little bit of time. So I'm just going to go to our driving control. And I'm going to drop in something that's very akin to CSS media queries, if you've seen that. Let's just drop in some visual states here. And as you can see, I made these in Blend. And what these are doing, firstly and foremost, I'm using a thing called a trigger. We ship one in the SDK, which you can derive from. There's a bunch of them already on the internet. I wrote my own based on the aspect ratio of the window. And all this is saying is, if the aspect ratio of the window is landscape, don't do anything, because that's already working quite well. If the aspect ratio of the window is portrait, then change some margins and change some grid positions and move things around a little bit. And so the addition of that little piece of XAML should mean, just as soon as we get our UI, let's just let it find the ball. Ooh. Oh, yeah, okay. Should mean that as we drag this in, we get a nicer little UI for dealing with that, and things move across and change their orientation and so on and so forth. that sets me up fairly well to run this on other kinds of devices. This being a universal Windows application, can't I just run it on a phone? I have a Windows 10 phone, so yeah, why can't we just run this on our phone? Let's stop debugging. Let's change the nature of our device here. Let's just see if I can actually stop that debugging. I'll warn you, sometimes Visual Studio hangs a little bit on me when I stop debugging, so we may have to kill Visual Studio at some times and go back. It's okay. Let's see how that works. We'll give it around about 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I think it's hung on me there. So what I'm going to do is just kill Visual Studio in the interest of time and bring it back up. So let's do that. We're working on a project called WED, is that right? And so let's go into dtempwed. Let's open that back up. Let's see if we can get back to that. And we were just about to put this onto a phone. So let's go and say what we want to do is the phone runs ARM-based architecture. Let me just unlock my phone. Let's click this to point at the device. I'm going to see if I can get you guys to be able to see my phone. So let's just go to my Project My Screen application, see if we can run that thing up. Is that not playing nicely for me now? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. So this is my Windows 10 phone. Okay, that's fine. I think we're still deploying to it in the background. Let's see if we can bring this up. Mm-hmm. Always takes a little time to do your first deploy down to a device, whether it be a phone or whether it be another kind of device, as we will see in a moment. But hopefully we'll deploy that down to this device. You might notice, by the way, that this does say connecting phone over Bluetooth with a different picture, because we had those different pictures for different device families. But we're now doing exactly the same thing on the phone here. I don't know where the ball is, but if we can make the ball go blue, green, red, and we can probably drive the ball as well. You are doing an amazing job of this, Jamie. Thank you so much. I make the ball go somewhere into that gentleman's bag. Then that's all good, and that's all working quite nicely. So exactly the same code as was running on all PCs, running on all Windows 10 phones. It's the same thing in this case, and as we're playing with it right now. But this being a universal Windows application, couldn't we run this on some other kind of device like a Raspberry Pi? And the answer is yes, we can run this on a Raspberry Pi. Now today, I don't just have a Raspberry Pi. I have Jamie's amazing piece of invention, which is this little sort of arcade console down here. An advanced piece of carpentry and electronics working in perfect harmony. What it is, it's a Raspberry Pi and a screen with some switches connected to joysticks and switches inside of this device. So that's what we've got there. So Raspberry Pi is also an ARM-based device. So if we stop debugging, let's see if we can do that. What we could do is let me just see if I've got connectivity to the Pi. This Pi is called MinWin PC, and we're in capital letters for some reason. But nonetheless, we can see that Pi, so that's good. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start debugging down on that device, because it typically takes a second or two to get stuff down there. So I'm going to say we want to debug on MinWin PC. We'll go for no authentication, because I know that one works. And we should be able to go and start debugging on that MinWin PC. The Raspberry Pi, Windows on Raspberry Pi, you don't kind of log in and run PowerPoint and that kind of thing. That's not really what it is. It's more like an appliance. The intention of the Raspberry Pi is that when it boots, it runs what it calls the default application. And the idea of that default application is it should be your application that takes over the Pi. That's the idea of it. You can talk to it with remote PowerShell, and you can talk to it with a web UI. So let's bring up the web UI while this deployment is happening, and let me give you a quick tour around that. So let me just authenticate myself to this Pi. Oh, I didn't type that right. Okay, so here we are on the Pi. You can see it's called MinWin PC. It's actually running a preview version of Windows 10. It's a little bit later than the public release. From this screen, you can change the device name, you can change the password, you can change the date and time, you can shut it down, you can reboot it. From this screen, apps, you can see the apps that are currently running on that Raspberry Pi device. You might have just noticed one just arrived. That's probably ours coming in from Visual Studio. You can choose apps to run, you can choose apps to uninstall, you can choose apps to make the default. You get a cheap and cheerful version of Process Manager on here, Task Manager. You get a cheap and cheerful version of Performance Monitor or Resource Monitor on here. You can see the I/O, it's writing something at the moment. You can debug the kernel if you want to, best of luck. You can debug processes if you want to, you can set up tracing. You get a cheap and cheerful version of Device Manager on here. By the way, let's just have a look at something I was interested in this. Oh yeah, so you'll see various IoT kind of bits and pieces coming in here with GPIO, PWM, I2C, SPI. Those are various sort of IoT kind of technologies in there. And then you can also see your Bluetooth devices, although mine doesn't always show up at the moment, and your network in here as well. Meanwhile, we should have been deploying down to the Pi. So I think if you can see the screen on the Pi, and apologies if you can't, but Jamie will be able to confirm that it's running that app, yeah? The problem is that the screen we've got on the Pi down here is not a touch screen. So we've run the app down there, but we can't do a flipping thing with it. so we're a little bit stuck. We can't do what we want with it down there. But what Jamie's got is he's got a joystick and switches connected to particular general purpose I/O pins on this Raspberry Pi. So if we could only program against those, we could do something with it. And of course, we can program against those, otherwise I wouldn't open up the whole conversation. That would be silly, right? So let's stop debugging. But when we do this, we go beyond the Universal Windows platform for the first time. And so what I need to do is bring in a reference to one of those extension SDKs. And if I go to my extension SDKs over here, you will see there's a bunch of... tooltip. You will see there's a bunch of them, like the one for desktop, mobile, Surface Hub, and IoT, and we're going to bring in the IoT. So let's do that. And that allows me to use some new types that I wasn't using previously. And I'm going to bring in a class that I've already written just to make things kind of quicker. So let's add a class in here. And we'll call this class, you've got GPIO switches. So I wrote a class called GPIO switch. And I'm just going to throw this in with a snippet. So bear with me 1 second and I'll try and explain what it does. And so what I want to make the point of here is we're using types like GPIO pin and like all of these really, actually these guys and this guy. These exist in the IoT extensions. They are not in the Universal Windows platform. You do not use these on a phone. You do not use these on an Xbox. I sound like green eggs and ham, but you get the idea. So what this class does, GPIO switch, you give it a pin number and a function to run. And when it tries to open a pin, it gets the default controller for GPIO. It tries to open the pin. It tells it we're doing input. It waits for the value to change on that pin. And if it thinks the switch is being switched on, it calls your function. That's really what it does. So I just need to make sure that I wire up a number of these switch classes to Jamie's pins on his Pi. So let's go back to our driving control over here. And I think there's a point in here where we set the ball. So let's find the bit where we set the ball. And here, when we've got the ball, let's say this dot do some IoT work, GPIO work. Let's generate that function. And so what I want to do is get hold of all the pins that Jamie has wired up. I've got a snippet called Jamie's pins. Bear with me 1 second while I make a member variable for that. And so what I've got here is just a dictionary. Oh, did we name the ball the wrong way? Oh, look, we've got capitalization. Bear with me. We're going to just refactor this very quickly. Let's call that ball. We're good. So what we've got here is a dictionary of numbers to actions. What to do when a particular pin is switched on. So pin number 13, Jamie, is forward. Pin number 26 is stop.
Yep.
You're just making this up, aren't you? Pin number 12 is red.
Yep.
I don't believe you. So anyway, we've got this dictionary. So what we need to do is we just need to enumerate round that. So we could say for each pin in this dot pin actions, let's say, actually, probably what we do it this way. Let's say this.pinList equals, I'm going off piste here, this.pinActions. Let's say select. Oh no, I'm not getting this right. Let me do it a different way. Let's say for each. Here we go. Let's be safe. Let's say pin in this.pinActions.keys. Those are all the keys, okay? Let's say GPIO switch. New one of those with the pin and the action. So that's going to be this.pinActions brackets pin. Stop me if I get this wrong. And that should do us. We probably just need to put these into a list somewhere. So I'm just going to make a little list of GPIO switches just to keep those things around. Let's call that list. We'll make it there. One of those. And then we'll just make sure that gets added. I'm just trying to avoid the garbage collector stealing those things off me. So hopefully we've created something for each pin that runs the function. We should be good. Let's see if we can debug this on the remote machine, on the Raspberry Pi. We're deploying, we think, down to the Raspberry Pi. Sometimes it's quite nice to go back to this little screen and see what it thinks it's doing. Let's have a look at performance. Let's see if we can see I.O. on the Pi. It's writing stuff. That's probably the Visual Studio package going to the SD card. Jamie's reporting signs of life at the Raspberry Pi end. Yep. Running?
Yep. Okay.
You think so?
Yep.
Do you want to try one of your magic buttons to see if you can change the color of the ball to green with the green button? Very brave to hold it up.
Yes.
Way! Blue. Hey. Green. Hey. Why not? Super. Super.
Make it move?
Well, it's entirely up to you. I think you should make it move, having made this beautiful machine. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. So, you know, Jamie came along and showed me this device, and I said, that's pretty cool. That's nice, you've made that thing. So over the weekend, I must admit, I was jealous. Over the weekend, I popped into the garden shed and I brought out the finest woodworking machinery and tools known to man. And I slaved hours and hours and hours, and I managed to make this. You wouldn't believe this is crafted from wood. It's a beautiful thing. And I thought, well, you know, we've got Xbox... gamepad controller APIs in the Universal Windows platform, so why don't we use those? We could use those. Let's see how that works. And so let's just drop down to the bottom of our driving control here, and let's see if we can add a little bit of code in here, just making a little space. I think I've got a little snippet, Xbox. Now, a bit of code popped in there. Let me just fix some namespaces and so on. And maybe this one here. And so what this does, this function start Xbox controller says, find me the first gamepad that's connected to this device. And then we go into a sort of asynchronous loop. Get me the current reading of that thing. If you're pressing the B button, then go red. If you're pressing the A button, then go blue. No, that's green, sorry. Pressing the X button, then go blue. If the left thumbstick is moving forwards, then we should go forwards. And if the left thumbstick is going left or right, then we should rotate left or right. So let's see if we can bring this into what we've got. We probably just need to make sure that we actually call this function here. So let's go back to the place where we have the ball. Set ball is good. And let's say this dot, I have no idea what I just called that function, start Xbox controller async. That might be okay. Let's try that. My Xbox controller is connected to my PC. It's not connected to the Raspberry Pi. So I'm going to switch this back to be on the PC for a minute. Let us see how that works. Jamie, return the ball. Is it sleeping? No, it's okay. It's good. It's alive. So the PC says it's connecting over Bluetooth. Let's see what happens with that. Does the ball look alive? Okay. Let's switch on the Xbox controller. Oh, we changed the manifest somewhere along the line, I think. It's tense. It's tense. I have a green button. I'm not sure this is going to work. Oh, I have a blue button. A red button. And actually, if you could pop it down, it's really easy to drive with this. Oh, no, it's not. I've crashed it. I think you were better at driving this than me. Anyway, you get the idea. It was easy before. I can do it. Do you want to play with that? You play with that. So we drive it with the Xbox controller, and I thought, well, I'm still a little bit jealous of Jamie, so I thought, well, let's just plow on with this. I thought maybe it might be nice to talk to it. So we got speech recognition APIs in the Universal Windows platform, so I thought, well, let's speak to it, let's talk to it. So let's just scroll down to the bottom of this ever-growing file, and let's throw in a little code snippet for speech recognition. Oh, wait a minute, don't get too excited. If you want to talk to the microphone, you need to ask for permission. So first off, let's go to our manifest and say, hey, we need to use the microphone on here. And so we'd ask for the microphone permission. And then let's go back to that code and throw in some speech recognition. I'm just going to fix a couple of namespaces. Bear with me a second. And so what does this function do? Well, it's another dictionary, but this time it's a dictionary of text to functions. So fairly simple to understand. We make a speech recognizer. Speech recognizer can actually do lots of stuff for you. What I'm asking it to do is probably the simplest thing. I just give it a list of commands and say, wait for those. It's not doing a whole speech grammar or anything fancy, but you can do speech grammars, but we're just doing a simple thing. So we just say, hey, look, if you see any of those keys from that dictionary, let me know. We tell it to start recognizing continuously, and when it finds a result, it will call us back. And if that is one of our dictionary keys, we will run that function. So probably, if we run this back on the local machine, are you still okay with this? You're not getting worn out? Okay. See how that goes. I should say, by the way, that the Xbox controller is still controlling that ball, so the thumbstick will stop it moving forward. Okay. It's just kind of how it is at this point. But we should, if we get that control from here to there. Have we got the ball? Oh, microphone, yeah. So we should be able to say, don't press any buttons. Green. Did we call that function?
No.
Oh. You let me do that. You're very unkind people. Let's go to set ball over here. We should have called the function. If you don't call the function, I can guarantee it won't work. If you do call the function, it still may not work. But we got to call the function. I'm notorious for doing that. It's a real demo, though. Okay. How's it doing? We should be able to. Maybe. Blue. Oh, come on. Blue. Green. Blue. Red. Hey, look, that works quite nicely. I don't know what happened to the first one. Where are we at in our time of this thing? Okay. Let me show you a different thing. So far, we've talked about refactoring the platform a little bit, and we've played with some different input mechanisms and so on, and seen some things on different devices. But we haven't just been doing that. The Windows 10 platform has also been growing. Now, I'm going to set up Andy here a little bit for his talk later in the day. The platform's been growing a lot. I'm reliably informed that we have over 2,500 new functional areas in the Windows 10 platform over where we've been before, and that equates out into 8,000 or more new functions for Windows 10 in our app APIs. Andy has a session, at the last session of our track here today, where he's going to go through every one of those APIs. No, of course not, but he will be producing some of the highlights from those APIs and talking about those in the third session of the track. I just wanted to pick out one area that kind of relates a little bit to what we're doing on the IoT device, and that is AllJoin. AllJoin is a technology that is getting associated with IoT, and what it's about, it's one of those technologies where it's about discovering services on your local network. So Andy might have a TV service, and I might have a TV remote controller, and I need to discover his service and use his TV. I bought a new TV only a few months ago. It does have an AllJoin service in it, which surprised me. It does have an AllJoin service in it. And so it's about service consumption and discovery on the local network. It is not a Microsoft technology. It's something that comes from the AllScene Alliance, which is part of the Linux Foundation. And there's actually quite a lot more to it than I'm going to show here this afternoon. I'm just going to show a little bit of it. But what I thought might be cool was to take our Pi that's connected over Bluetooth to our Sphero, and can we make a network service out of this? Can we expose this on a network as a universal Windows application that advertises itself over AllJoin? I thought, let's see if we can do that. The way this works, if we pop back over to Visual Studio, is you start off, like all distributed computing technologies, with an XML file. You define an interface. Here is the interface. Let's have a look at it in Notepad. So what I've done is I've made an interface called Sphero. You can rotate the ball, you can drive it forward, you can make it stop, you can turn the light on, and you can change its color. That's an AllJoin definition. That's a standard AllJoin interface. We have a little tool in Visual Studio. It's called the AllJoin Studio. It's actually something that you get from the Visual Studio Gallery. It's not built in. And what you can do with that is you can point at one of those files. So what I'm going to do is point at one of those files. Oh, I think it's going to go off into a big huff on me. Oh. I think what it's doing is sniffing the local network for AllJoin services. I'm a bit concerned about when it may or may not come back. We shall see. Let's just give it a couple of seconds. If it's not going to play, you're not going to play with me. Okay. We'll give it one more go. So let me kill Visual Studio, see if we can bring it back. That's the second time I've done that today. Let's bring Visual Studio back and see if that AllJoin tool is going to play. If not, we'll do something else. Let's open up that same project solution, Wednesday. Okay. Let me see if I can do that again. If it hangs in the same way, we'll take a different path. AllJoin, click, dialogue like now. No, not donut of death. Okay, let's not go down that route. Let's just do one slightly different thing. Let's end that again because I think the dialogue's not going to play nicely with me. Apologies for that. Let's go back into our project again. Let's play just one last thing with our other piece of code. So let's just drop into dtemp Wednesday. Excuse me. Okay. Back in our project, we're not going to press the AllJoin button this time around. I have to show you that another day. It works fine. It's not playing nicely for me today. When we were building up our UI, I sneaked in one last little control that I didn't show you at the time. Let's just have a look at that driving control. I sneaked into here when we weren't really looking. A thing called an ink canvas, something that collects digital ink. I just kind of sneaked that in there when you weren't looking, really. And I thought, well, we've had speech. Why can't we also control the ball with ink? And let's see what we could do to do that and see if we could get that working. So let's jump back to our code behind. And what we're going to do is at the point where we've got hold of the ball, so let's go down to that set ball method. Let's get hold of that ink canvas, and it fires an event. This is the most basic thing we could kind of do with it. For strokes collected, when you collect some ink, we'll say on strokes collected. Now what I did, I think if we go and find the stuff that we did for speech, so let's go and find the speech bit. These commands here would actually be quite useful for inking as much as talking. So what I'm going to do is steal them out of here and go and put them in the constructor. Let's jump to the constructor. Oh no, don't panic, Laurent. It's going to be okay. I think I know where I'm going. I'm going crazy. It's okay. I've gone crazy. It's all gone crazy. I'm going to turn that into a member variable just quickly. And now we've got that in somewhere that can be accessed in any of our member functions. So that should be okay. What I'm then going to do is this function for onStrokes collected. Let's write a function for that. Unfortunately, for me, I've got one. Bear with me 1 second while I fix a couple of namespaces. So what are we doing? At the point where we get some strokes of ink from the pen, we say, make me an ink recognizer container. Recognize all of the strokes that you've just captured. What it does, it gives you back a sort of list of results, which is a bit tedious. So it's a bunch of strings. I flatten them into one array or one list. And that's what I'm doing here. Where did that code just go to? That's what I'm doing just here with this select many. I'm just getting all the candidates and flattening them out into a list. If we get any, and there's an intersection with our commands, and we get one, then we execute it. And that's really what we're doing with this. If I run this back on the local machine, what I would hope, custodian of the ball, I've got to bring you out of retirement, because the all join demo wouldn't work. Actually, it was Visual Studio that wouldn't let me do it. I should be able to pick up my pen, and we should see whether we can talk to the ball through the medium of ink alone. And about 30 other different mechanisms that we've got configured up here as well. See where we are. So I should be able to. Have we got the ball? Is he alive? Ooh, no, we got a boo. Let's try again. I'm not sure you were holding it correctly. Notice where the blame sits in this demo. Or did we break something in our code? Let's see. So we should be able to take the pen, and what have we got there? We might be able to go... I can't say it, because obviously if I say it, then, you know, we can't say blue. We could write... Oh. Is it trying? Can't tell. Okay, but you get the idea. Okay, look, fun and games with that. What do you do when you've built these applications? Well, you can submit them to our store. You don't have to. We've made it much easier to sideload these applications for non-store scenarios for Windows 10, but a lot of applications do go into the store. In order to do that, again, and there's a big theme of oneness around Windows 10, we have one developer center for submitting these applications across the whole range of device types. One place to go and register as a developer, so you don't become a HoloLens developer and a phone developer, you just become a Windows 10 developer at dev.windows.com. You can absolutely submit one binary package for an application for multiple device families. It could be all device families, but you can absolutely submit one binary package containing ARM code and x86 code and x64 code into the store for mobile and Xbox and HoloLens and all those different things. You can absolutely do that. And then, of course, the Developer Center becomes the place that you return back to see how many users have got your app and set up your promotional codes and those kinds of things to monitor the app with analytics and all those kinds of things. In terms of the store, just kind of quickly, in the past, you might be familiar that we had a store for Xbox apps, and we had a store for phone apps, and we had a store for PC apps. We don't have any of that stuff anymore for Windows 10. We have one store. We have all of our apps and games going in there. We have all of our music that Microsoft has goes in there. All of our movies, all of our TV shows, everything goes into one store across all the different device types. Just one thing I'll say about the store, just kind of while we're here. We are in the process, kind of as we speak, really, of not just only having a consumer store, we're also in the process of opening up a business store for these applications on Windows 10. In short, the way that that works is that I, as a developer, can submit an application into the store for business and or consumer. It's my choice. And then a company can come along and do volume purchase of those applications from me, so they can buy a couple of 100,000 copies of my app. Thanks very much. I like that. at. And we can then help with the licensing within that company of making sure there's not too many copies being downloaded and those kinds of things. The other thing you can do with the store is you can also use it as a line of business store within a company. So you can take your application, publish it into the business store. No one needs to see that beyond the bounds of your company, and you can use it as a distribution mechanism for those line of business applications inside of your company. This is something that's happening kind of right now. I don't have a concrete date for exactly when it'll be finished, but it's going on as we speak. The first web pages are starting to show up on the internet for the business store. With that, my time is pretty much up. I hope that you found this some kind of mixture of interesting, educational, and a little bit of fun. If you want more information after the session, the best place to go, of course, you can come and talk to me. I'm around all day in here and then around elsewhere. We can have a chat. After the event, you can go to dev.windows.com for the developer information. If you want to join our Insider program and run Insider builds, preview builds, you can go to insider.windows.com. And if you want to get hold of me after the session, I'm Mike Talty. You can find me on my email. You can find me on my Twitter. Feel free to reach out on those things. I would strongly encourage you, please, to stay in here for the rest of the Windows tracks this afternoon. We have the genius that is Laurent Bunyan coming up after me, the wizard that is Mr. Andy Wigley after him. We've got some great stuff for you this afternoon. Please stick around and chat. We'll take a break. Thank you for your time. See you later in the day. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.